This is VOA News. Via remote, I'm Tommy McNeil. The United States' top infectious diseases expert is now saying the country is in an unnecessary predicament of soaring COVID-19 cases fueled by unvaccinated Americans and the virulent Delta variant. Dr. Anthony Fauci, describing himself as very frustrated, added that we're going in the wrong direction. He said recommending that the vaccinated wear a mask is under active consideration by the government's leading public health officials. Also, booster shots may be suggested for people with suppressed immune systems who have been vaccinated already. Fauci, who also serves as President Joe Biden's chief medical advisor, told CNN's State of the Union that he has taken part in conversations about altering the mask guidelines. France's parliament approved a law early Monday requiring special virus passes for all restaurants and domestic travel and mandating vaccinations for all health workers. Both measures have prompted protests and political tensions. President Emmanuel Macron and his government say that they are needed to protect vulnerable populations and hospitals as infections rebound and to avoid new lockdowns. The law requires all workers in the healthcare sector to start getting vaccinated by September 15th or risk suspension. It also requires a health pass to enter all restaurants, trains, planes, and some other public venues. It initially applies to all adults, but will apply to everyone 12 and older starting September 30th. To get the pass, people must have proof that they're fully vaccinated, recently tested negative, or recently recovered from the virus. Paper or digital documents will be accepted. There is more at voanews.com. This is VOA News. German politicians are deeply divided over warning by Chancellor Angela Merkel's chief of staff that restrictions for unvaccinated people may be necessary if COVID-19 infection numbers reach new heights in the coming months. The chief of staff, Helga Braun, told the newspaper Bild that he does not expect another coronavirus-related lockdown in Germany. But Braun said unvaccinated people may be barred from entering venues like restaurants, movie theaters, and stadiums because the residual risk is too high. His comments fueled an ongoing debate in German politics about potential vaccination requirements. The issue has proven divisive, even with Merkel's own Christian Democrats Party. Although the pandemic disrupted family life across the U.S. since taking hold in spring of 2020, some parents are grateful for one consequence, and that is that they're now opting to homeschool their children even as schools plan to resume in-person classes. The specific reasons vary widely. Some families who spoke with the Associated Press have children with special educational needs. Others seek a faith-based curriculum or say their local schools are flawed. The common denominator is they tried homeschooling on what they thought was a temporary basis and found it to be beneficial to their children. The United States will continue to carry out airstrikes to support Afghan forces facing attack from the insurgent Taliban. That's according to a regional commander on Sunday, as the U.S. and other international forces have drawn down troops in Afghanistan. The Taliban escalated its offensive in recent weeks, taking rural districts and surrounding provincial capitals after U.S. President Joe Biden said in April U.S. troops would be withdrawn by September, ending a 20-year foreign military presence. U.S. Marine General Kenneth McKenzie told a news conference in Kabul that the United States has increased airstrikes in support of Afghan forces over the last several days and prepared to continue this heightened level of support in the coming weeks if the Taliban continue their attacks. McKenzie, who leads U.S. Central Command, which controls U.S. forces for a region that includes Afghanistan, declined to say whether the U.S. forces will continue airstrikes after the end of their military mission on August 31st. Trucks carrying water and food have been streaming into a city in central China after flooding killed at least 63 people while soldiers repaired flood barriers. Residents cleared away mud, wrecked cars, and other debris after rains that began Tuesday subsided. Some neighborhoods were still waiting for water up to 2 meters deep to drain. More at voanews.com. Via remote, I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Monday, July 26th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Somalia's long-delayed electoral process stumbled again on Sunday.
There are some issues that need to be resolved. One of them is agreeing on Somaliland Electoral Committee. Another issue is the international community and the donors have not agreed on the financial support proposal that the government asked.
South Sudan's president names first female speaker of the National Assembly. Zimbabwe receives COVID-19 vaccines from China amid fears of a third wave. And Boko Haram attacks a village in Cameroon on the border with Nigeria.
Cameroon's military says on Saturday about 90 heavily armed terrorists on six military tactical vehicles and several motorcycles entered the country from Nigeria and launched attacks on Sangme village.
And the leader of the indigenous people of Biafra is suspected in federal court today, Monday. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Somalia's long-delayed electoral process failed again to begin on Sunday as scheduled. Sunday should have been the Senate election, followed later in October this year by presidential election. Abdi Omar Mohamed Razak is a Somali member of parliament and a former security minister. He says some issues that needed to be resolved were not, including agreeing on Somaliland electoral committees and financing. He says the international community and donors have not agreed on the estimated $25 million price tag that the Somali government proposed to finance the election.
The election of the upper house that was supposed to take place today is yet again delayed. And I think despite the fact that the prime minister is genuinely committed to a timely election and has put efforts to resolve outstanding issues, the office of the presidency intends to use every delaying trick in the book. However, having said that, though, there are some issues that remain unresolved, and I think that's where the delay comes from. There are some issues that need to be resolved. One of them is agreeing on Somaliland Electoral Committee. Another issue is the financing. The international community and the donors have not agreed on the financial support proposal that the government asked, which is roughly $25 million. And there are some other technical issues that need to be ironed out before the election takes place, including the monitoring of the elections, including the security of the election polls, and so on and so forth. So unless these issues are resolved, the upper house elections will be delayed again.
So what does this mean now for the presidential election and the tenure of President Mohamed Abdullahi Mohamed Farmajo?
The delaying trend that we have seen for the last three times continues. I think it will be delayed again, the election of the presidency. It will not happen. Initially, it was supposed to happen in October 10. That has been shifted in the last timetable that the prime minister presented. So the likelihood that the presidential election should take place sometime in November be shifted again because the election of the upper house has not taken place as planned.
Does this delay affect all states in Somalia? In other words, when do you think Somalia can have election again?
Well, it's very difficult question to answer because so far twice has been postponed. And now it didn't happen as planned. Today was the day that the election of the upper house was supposed to take place. It didn't. So it's very difficult to answer that question. No one has a definitive answer to that question.
We thank you so much, as usual, for your insight.
Thank you, James. Thank you very much.
Abdi Razak Omar Mohamed is a Somali member of parliament and former security minister. He was speaking with us from the capital, Mogadishu. Cameroon says hundreds of civilians have fled a northern village on the border with Nigeria after a Boko Haram attack on Saturday that left 8 government troops dead and 13 wounded. The Cameroon military deployed to the area and said fighters were also killed. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
Cameroon's military says on Saturday about 90 heavily armed terrorists on 6 military tactical vehicles and several motorcycles entered the country from Nigeria and launched attacks on Sangme village. Sangme is located in Cameroon's far north region that shares a border with Nigeria's Borno state, said to be an epicenter of jihadist group Boko Haram. In a press release, a military spokesperson says the fighters killed 8 Cameroonian troops and wounded 13 others. The statement by Army Captain Cyril Serge Atonfa Gemo says the troops fought back but did not say how many combatants were killed. Gemo said the fighters escaped to Nigeria carrying bodies of their dead peers. Mijiyawa Bakari is governor of Cameroon's far north region. Bakari says 6 of the Cameroonian troops were killed on the spot, while the other 2 died while being transported to a hospital in the northern town of Marwa. He says many troops suffered severe wounds during the intense shootout with Boko Haram terrorists, but managed to escape. Bakari says he is extending the condolences of Cameroon's President Paul Biya to the families of the soldiers killed. Cameroon's military said Biya immediately ordered the deployment of more troops to secure the country's territory and civilians. Bakari says several hundred civilians escaped from Sangme and neighboring villages to the bush for safety. He says the fleeing civilians should return to their villages as the military has been redeployed to protect lives and property.
Boko Haram n'est pas fini dans
he says people who think that Boko Haram has been eradicated from northern Cameroon are wrong. He says he is calling on civilians to help the military fight the terrorists through information sharing. Bakari says he has asked traditional rulers, the clergy and community leaders to re-mobilize self-defense groups, especially along the border with Nigeria. The Nigerian government has not issued a statement regarding the attack, but the multinational joint task force of the Lake Chad Basin Commission, comprising troops from Cameroon, Nigeria, Chad and Benin, has acknowledged the incident and said the fighters crossed over from Nigeria. Security analyst and former military spokesman DJ Bajek says the Cameroonian military alone cannot defeat Boko Haram terrorists. He says Boko Haram has been infiltrating many localities on the northern border with Nigeria. He says it is very difficult for the military to detect the terrorists if civilians do not collaborate by reporting strangers in all border towns and villages. Bajek says churches and mosques should ask civilians to stop lodging visitors and giving strangers food, thinking that they are obeying religious teachings. Bajek said fighters may be disguising themselves as ranchers, moving around in search of food for their cattle, or as farmers visiting markets to sell crops. In December 2020, Bakari said Boko Haram was establishing ties with top officials of his region. The revelation came after Cameroon's military arrested Blama Mala, a former lawmaker, for allegedly supplying cattle to the Nigerian terrorist group. Mala was detained in the northern town of Mora. Boko Haram terrorists have been fighting for 11 years to create an Islamic caliphate in northeast Nigeria. The fighting has spread to Cameroon, Chad, Niger, and Benin, with regular killings, burnings of mosques, churches, markets, and schools, and attacks on military installations. The United Nations reports that Boko Haram violence has cost the lives of 30,000 people and displaced about 2 million in Nigeria, Cameroon, Niger, and Chad. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
A spokesperson for South Sudan President Salva Kiir says the country made history last Friday when President Kiir nominated the first female speaker of the country's transitional National Legislative Assembly. Atain Wekatain says the nomination of Jema Nunu Kumba as Speaker of Parliament means that a woman is heading one of the three pillars of the South Sudan government.
First of all, history has been made by appointing the first ever woman to be the Speaker of the Parliament in the Republic of South Sudan. The nomination of Comrade Nunu Kumba came as a result of consultation that the President with the Political Bureau as well as the caucus of the SPLM in the designated revitalized transitional national parliament. She was the acting Secretary General of the Sudan People Liberation Movement for over 10 years. So she's the right person.
For so long, activists have been demanding more roles for women in the national leadership of South Sudan. Can we say that this nomination is overdue?
Yes, given that this position, the second position in the government, has been given to a woman because the executive is led by the president and the legislature led by a woman and the judiciary led by a man. Now the three pillars of the government have been filled with 35% representation of women being properly implemented, because the other pillar is the legislature is now led by a woman, and another woman is a deputy, by the way, deputy of the Council of State, Mary Ayan Majok. So women are now represented, and I think they can be quite happy. Even now I've seen several women organizations within South Sudan are celebrating the nomination of Comrade Jema Nunu Kumba.
Help us to understand, why should President Salva Kiir nominate the Speaker of Parliament? Normally, at least in other countries, the Speaker is elected by his or her peers in Parliament.
The government we are in is what is called a revitalized national unity government, whereby it is a government of parties that were fighting the war before and signed the peace agreement on the 12th of September 2018. So all the positions are allocated to the parties in the government who are the former fighters. So the speaker positions has been given to the Sudan People Liberation Movement, which is led by President Salva Kiir, and they have more than 350 members. So the position is for the SPLM. That is why the president can nominate someone for the 350 members to endorse. So it is the SPLM seat that made the president to nominate the person. The Speaker of Council of State is not nominated by the president because it is given to the SPLM-IO. It is the SPLM-IO that will decide who should be the Speaker of the Council of State. So when Dr. Riak nominates the Speaker of Council of State, the president's role will be actually to appoint. This is what the revitalized peace agreement says.
The newly appointed members of parliament, when are they expected to be sworn in?
They will be sworn in within this coming week, which has started today, Monday, within the course of that week, before the weekend.
Thank you so much. We do always appreciate speaking with you.
Thank you.
Atain Wekatain is the spokesperson for South Sudan President Salva Kiir. He was speaking with us from the capital, Juba. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, July 26th. Zimbabwe on Sunday received 1 million Sinovac vaccines from China as the African country battles to meet the demand for the COVID-19 jabs. As Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare for VOA News, Zimbabweans want to get vaccinated to beat a third wave facing the country.
After the arrival of the doses from China on Sunday, Finance Minister Muthuli Ncube told reporters that Zimbabwe had paid $92 million for 12 million jabs from China and from the COVAX, the United Nations Vaccine Sharing Initiative.
So our vaccination program and the vaccine acquisition program is going very well. For the first dose, already reaching about 50,000 vaccinations a day, which is good going indeed. So all is going well, and we feel that we're well on our way towards achieving that target of herd immunity, which we need in order to open the economy safely so that the recovery is sustained and we can move from strength to strength in line with our objectives.
In a virtual press conference this week, Dr. Matshidiso Moeti, the World Health Organization's Regional Director for Africa, said the continent was going through a third wave of COVID-19 infections and should urgently ramp up COVID-19 vaccination program.
Africa continues to lag behind, sadly. Yet Africa's supply crunch is starting to ease. The first delivery of doses donated by the United States government through the COVAX facility are arriving in Africa, and altogether nearly 60 million doses are expected in the coming weeks through COVAX from Team Europe, UK, purchased doses, and from other partners. African countries must go all out and speed up their vaccine rollouts by 5 to 6 times if they are to get all these doses into arms and fully vaccinate the most vulnerable 10% of their people by the end of September.
COVID-19 is the disease caused by the coronavirus. Slightly more than 1,400,000 Zimbabweans out of a population of 14 million have received their first shot, and nearly 680,000 have received their second inoculation since the program started in February. Nomeni Murwizi is one of the Zimbabweans who has yet to get a vaccine due to shortages.
My assumption would be the chances of me getting vaccinated would actually would have increased due to the increased supply of the vaccines. My guess or wish would be the service rate would actually have actually improved so that the numbers could plummet and the chances of people getting vaccinated does increase. So the expectation actually increases of me getting a vaccine with no hassle at all or with minimum fuss.
Zimbabwe had turned down Johnson & Johnson vaccines, which the African Union sourced for its members with financing from the African Development Bank, but changed its mind. Zimbabwe has 97,277 confirmed corona infections and 3,050 deaths, according to the Johns Hopkins University, which is tracking the global outbreak. On Sunday, John Mangwiro, Zimbabwe's junior health minister, said with the arrival of a million jabs, the vaccination program would intensify. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare.
In Nigeria, the lawyer for the leader of the indigenous people of Biafra says he will file an application today, Monday, for Nnamdi Kanu's release or for him to be transferred to a correctional center where he can be examined by medical experts. Kanu's trial is expected to begin today, Monday, in a federal court in Abuja. He is charged with terrorism and treasonable felony, among other charges. Kanu's organization is calling for an independent state for ethnic Igbos in southeast Nigeria. The Nigerian government considers the group a terrorist organization. Lawyer Efiyanyi Ejiofor says the federal government has no right to stop Biafrans who plan to come to the courthouse today to witness the trial.
Actually, we intend to file an application for his release against the backdrop of the fact that he never jumped bail, and the facts of what transpired in his home will be presented to the courts, probably in the subsequent proceedings, not tomorrow. Tomorrow he may be, we have other applications before the court will take tomorrow. The one that they will transfer is our request to transfer him to correctional center for attention and also for medical expert to see him and then look at his medical concerns and possible medical solutions to his medical situation.
The last time we spoke, you mentioned Kanu's health. What is the status of his health now?
It has not improved tremendously, but he's still managing because somebody who is kept in a solitary confinement is not allowed to have deserving medical solutions to his case, as he would have ordinarily been obliged in a normal set of course of living. So he's not improving, but we're going to address it in court tomorrow because it contains an application we file in court, which is right for hearing. So tomorrow we mention it to the court and also take our application and allow the court to rule on it for his sound medical expert to visit him and give him medical attention.
We understand that Biafrans plan to show up in numbers at the court, even though the federal government has warned them not to come to the court.
Thank you, Mr. James. The federal government has no right to stop people from participating in the court proceedings. It's their constitutional right to be there. So what we'll be talking about is their conduct within the court's vicinity. I've already tweeted and urged people who are coming, sympathizers and well-wishers who are coming to be part of the proceedings, to be civil in their conduct and also not to be armed with any form of IPOB insignias, because that will amount to automatic killing. Because once a security agent sights you with any form of IPOB insignia, the person will be eliminated almost immediately. So they are coming, and I've urged strength and also urged them to be peaceful and civil in their conduct and assemble, sing, display their placards about the injustice being meted out to Nnamdi Kanu and also the entire Igbos and Biafrans.
When we last spoke, you mentioned that Kanu was arrested in Kenya. I'm wondering, what was he doing in Kenya?
As a British citizen, he has the right to visit any place he wants to go to. He actually was in Kenya for a private engagement, private meetings and other engagement that has to do with his struggle.
Is there dissension or disagreement within the indigenous people of Biafra movement since Kanu's arrest?
No, to the best of my knowledge, I don't think they have any issues. As my client, brother, if they have any issue that has to do with the areas of my intervention as their lawyer, they will let me know.
Efiyanyi Ejiofor is the lawyer for Nnamdi Kanu, the leader of the indigenous people of Biafra. It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with action and the latest update from the Tokyo Olympic Games as day four of the 32nd games rolled in on Sunday for athletes to claim silverware, many hoping that it will be in the form of Olympic gold. In swimming, South Africa's swimming star Tajiana Shoemaker has set a new Olympic record in posting the fastest time in the heats for the women's 100 meters breaststroke. Tatjana Shoemaker, who is considered the favorite for the Olympic gold in the 200 meters breaststroke, stormed to victory in heat 5, touching the wall in 1 minute 4.82 seconds. Staying with swimming, teenage swimmer Ahmed Hafuani stunned the Tokyo Aquatic Center to become the first African to win a gold medal at the 2020 Olympics after a shock triumph in the 400 meters freestyle. His winning time of 3 minutes 43.36 seconds was 3 seconds faster than his personal best. And now to Olympic football news. Reigning champions Brazil were held to a goalless draw by the Ivory Coast in the men's Olympic football competition on Sunday. While in another game involving another African side, the South African under-23 Tokyo Olympics football dream ended on Sunday with a heartbreaking 4-3 defeat to France at the Santiana Stadium on Sunday, where André Pierre's hat-trick proved too good to earn France a 4-3 win over South Africa to keep the French hopes of progressing into the next round alive. Staying with Olympic football news, Zambia international Barbara Banda continued her superb breathtaking goal-scoring form in Tokyo 2020 as she becomes the first woman in Olympic history to back 2 hat-tricks. The 21-year-old forward had emerged the first Zambian and African to score a hat-trick at the Games following a treble in her side's 10-3 humiliation against the Netherlands on Wednesday. The Shanghai Shenghai striker replicated same efforts against China, but they were lately forced to a 4-4 draw on Saturday. In basketball news, Nigeria's men's basketball team, the Tigers, were beaten 84-67 in their opening basketball game in Group B against the Bombers of Australia. Day 4 of the Olympic Games will see South Africa's Rugby Sevens team a strong favorite for the gold medal. The expectation is a little lower, but the boys will be hoping to go at least one better and make the final, if not go all the way to getting their hands on an Olympic gold medal. The speed, power and excitement of the Kenyan rugby team makes them a threat to anyone on their day, and they will be looking to pull off a shock or two and get into the knockout stages, which could be an improved showing from their last Olympic outing. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day.
And that's it for this Monday, July 26th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Barty, wishing that you will have a great week.